This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
That's it. That's all I got.
What up, G?
What up? What up?
Man, I got a story for you.
Uh-oh.
So, was chit-chatting, you know, trying to be a lot more, not a lot more, little bit more approachable.
All right.
So, I was talking to my neighbor, and he was telling me this story. And like everybody else, you know how you live in neighborhoods, and there's people you talk to that's really like, what, they're either on your, in your radius of like cross the street or to the right of you, to the left of you. Yeah. But very few people really interact with, depending on the size of your neighborhood, like somebody that's in the front entrance if you live in the back.
Maybe just like your next door neighbor, right?
Yeah, so this is like across the street. Like our kids play together a lot. So we're, you know, hey, how you doing? How was your week? Blah, blah. So this, one of my neighbors, he is like a cyclist. Like mountain bike, has the outfits. Like he's the guy. Like on Sunday when you may be Saturday or during the week or even in the afternoon, if there's like a hot day, he's outside like retooling his bike, washing the bike off. Like
so he about that life.
He's about that life. So he tells me about some folks in the neighborhood. He goes, man, I rode my bike. I got invited to ride with some guys in the neighborhood. And I'm like, all right. So I'm telling the story as my neighbor. Just, man, I'm riding a bike. And he said, man, we go. And I don't know, but he says, riding a bike with speed is important. But also, you have to know your surroundings. So they're riding a bike in an area he doesn't know. So this guy, he says, the neighbor in our neighborhood, he says, first of all, I'll never ride bikes with this dude ever again. I said, it was that bad. He goes, let me tell you why it was bad. I said, why? He said, they're riding, so now he's riding his bike in a unfamiliar trail. So he's riding, and he says, every single time he catches up with the guy takes off. He's like, he's trying not to be rude, but he's like, man, this dude needs to slow down. But every time he catches up to him, the guy takes off. So he's like, you know, and he doesn't want to be the guy that's like, hey, slow down, you're going too fast, because he's a new guy. And if these guys are cool, he doesn't want to lose the opportunity to ride bikes with some new guys, because this guy just moved. He moved several months ago from Detroit.
Okay, so there's a whole etiquette behind this.
Yes. But he said, this dude is really just, he's like, he's huffing and puffing, like, ah. And the guy's like, you all right? And his breathing is no. But he says, oh, yeah, I'm fine. But he says, Steve, I am dying. Like, this dude is kicking my ass. And I'm like, well, what's the problem? He said, well, here's the problem. This dude doesn't really look like the guy that should be pedaling consistently as fast as he's pedaling. I said, I don't get it. All right, look, the dude is a little bit, his weight and his speed don't compute.
Okay. Big bone?
Yeah, big bone. But he said, man, this dude is just pounding his ass off. And he said, bro, and I'm a pretty good rider. You know, I don't mean to judge, but I don't understand why this dude is killing me like I'm killing me. So he said, this goes on for the next hour and 20 minutes. Mm. So he's going, and then they finally finish with the trail. And he's like, man. He was like, how are you doing? He's like, man, it was all right. It was cool. you want to come next week? He's like, yeah, I can. Well, you know, got to talk with the wife and see how some things going. So it was three of them, my neighbor and then the other two guys. Well, he says the friend spills the beans. The friend tells on the guy that invited him over. This dude is riding, guess what? An e-bike. Mm. He was riding an electrical bike.
Cheat code.
He said, if I had Superman heat-seeking eyes, I would have killed him on the spot. He said it was so... The dude...
So you can still generate the pedals even on an e-bike?
Bro, I guess the e-bike is doing all the work.
Yeah.
You can do it, but he said the dude... But here's the part he said he was pissed off about. The guy who invited him didn't even tell him. His buddy told on him. Mm. So the whole time...
Dry snitching.
For the whole hour and a half, this dude, hour and 15 minutes, this bike ride, over 30, 40 miles, 50 miles. This dude barely did anything. Mm. So I said, what are you going to do? He said, man, I'm not riding with that dude ever again. And that just kind of is like, it's so, why are you telling this story, Steve? What's the whole point? The point is, man, people are doing things and just cutting short.
They capping, like the young folks say.
Oh, my gosh.
Capping and snitching is what I got from that story.
Man, can you imagine, capping and snitching, can you imagine me and you working out or something, like in a gym?
And I got 45 plates, but they really are 10s. They just look like 45.
Yes, and you over there.
You keep them clean, though.
Yeah, we maxing. You maxing like 230.
Bro. Man, he revving them 225. Bop, bop, bop,
50
bop,
times, but really
it's
all
really
you,
95 pounds.
Yes. Like you got... You got the weights from, like, say, a movie.
Yeah.
Right?
They got them at, like, the, here in Charlotte, is this little discovery place where they look like they're heavy, but they're really not.
Oh, yeah, so, bah, man. Bah, bah. Yeah, so it just, I was like, man. And they just told a story, and I just thought it was hilarious because, really, how many times have you done something or been with somebody?
And then you compare.
And you compare and realize.
They capping.
You comparing it to a person who's really not even putting in that work. Mm. So I just thought it was awesome.
E-bike dude, stop capping.
Yes.
You leading people astray.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And stopping for donuts after.
Right. The bike and the physique didn't match up.
Not even close. So who we got?
Coming up on the Cut To It podcast, we've got Jeff Gordon, the retired driver of the number 24 car. He's a four-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, and he has the third most wins in NASCAR history. Right now, he's a Fox Sports analyst for the NASCAR Cup Series. Jeff Gordon, join us in studio for the Cut To It podcast. Jeff Gordon, thanks for coming.
My pleasure. Always been a fan of this guy over here, Steve, and I think we met a couple times. We haven't really hung out, but we've met and mad respect for what you did on the field. I think I've told you this. Longtime 49ers fan, but I've lived in Charlotte for many years, going back to early 90s when I came to NASCAR. Mm. And so when the Panthers came, I always had a special place there. That as long as you weren't playing my team,
as long as you were in the 49ers,
it's all good. It's all good. And but huge fan of your work and always love what you brought on the field.
Well, huge fan of you as well. I'm actually a 49ers fan as well, so that's pretty cool. So yeah, so this is gonna start off.
Well,
really
I'm from
well.
The Bay Area, originally.
It's a Bay guy.
My family's from Monterey.
Okay.
And then my folks moved down to L.A., so grew up in L.A.
SoCal, man. Yeah. Beautiful place.
It sure is, isn't it? There's no place like it. No, traffic isn't. And all.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't live there, I'll be honest. Yeah. I like to drive. I do not like to sit
in traffic. You don't like to
sit? No. Yeah. I need to be moving.
Yeah, I just
it's like going fishing. I'm not going to just put a hook in the water. I want to actually catch some fish.
Yeah.
That's why I don't fish.
You don't have the patience for it.
I've never. Someone,
you got to go with the right people.
Yeah. Someone invited me to fish. I will not say the name because you hit me with the flex and said, hey, I'm going fishing and you want to join. I said, maybe we could do something else, but I don't fish.
I used to be
Yeah,
that way.
You don't fish with the right people.
Yeah, I used to be like that until I started finding the right experiences where I was like, oh, this is a whole nother level of fishing right here really? That I can get into.
So you fishing up at Lake Norman?
No. I mean, my parents have a pond that they stocked, and I'll take my kids out there, and we'll do a little, you know.
Catch and release?
Yeah, just like bass, carp, stuff like that. But I've been with Rick Hendrick on his fishing boat, and we actually did a trip. Mm.
Now, you didn't want to flex, but he will. Yeah. Oh, those arms are coming out of that button up, Jeff.
You're right. Bulging out of the
When I fish with Rick
that's
Hendrick.
How I feel, man. When you catch it, well, I'm telling you, when you go fish with that guy, it's next level.
So, little size story. I purchased word on the Lake Norman streets. I think I purchased your old condo.
Oh, what? Really?
Up in Lake Norman. It used to be Queens Landing across.
Yes.
I had that back in, it was actually people used to think I was trying to hold out when I tore my hamstrings. Uh-huh. And I had said, if I wanted to hold out, I'd just go up to my lake house. And there was a lake house right up there. Mm. I had a boat, had the dock.
Another flex.
No. It was, listen, it wasn't a flex because here's why.
It's okay, bro.
I learned
okay.
very quickly, electricity and water equals a lot of expensive repairs.
Oh, dang!
So I had a boat, and then I had that condo that was up there that they said it was yours. And when you first came here,
yeah, that was first I lived out near the Speedway, uh-huh. and that didn't last very long. And boom, I was up the lake.
Wow! And so it's true, huh? Man, I sold it for change on the dice.
Well, Jeff, our first segment is called Get Iced Up.
Yeah, we haven't even started.
We haven't. Right? We went straight into it. But our first segment is called Get Iced Up. They're random icebreakers developed by Smitty. You don't know what's coming up. There may be a follow-up. There may not be. It may be a question about who's your favorite Migo. I have no idea. But Smitty, go ahead and give them the first one, and we'll get you iced up.
All right, you ready?
No, but okay. Well, I'm going to give it a try.
It is a test about yourself. So if you fail,
yeah, I'm failing
blame yourself.
Myself. Got it.
All right. So, automatic or stick shift?
Oh, is paddle an option in there?
Paddle.
You know,
paddle is like a paddle.
Yeah, what kind of paddling are you referring to?
we're not that versed.
Here's what I say. Yeah, I'm a technology guy. Like, okay. I love technology. And to me, these days, what's happening in automobiles you could even go electric, right? There's no gears at all.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I grew up racing with stick shift, so I love stick. But these days, you know, the fastest race cars on the planet are all paddle.
Oh.
So, you know, you just got the paddles on the back
of
the steering wheel.
Oh, I know okay. something. I didn't know it was a paddle. I just knew it was the thing on the back of my steering wheel.
No, I thought you were talking about something else. That's what I'm going. I'm right. like, nope. Yeah. No.
So it probably leaned more towards, believe it or not, automatic. These days, these like 10-speed automatics are faster than you know, just a manual stick shift.
Mm.
So I'm all about speed.
Yeah. Mm. Favorite vacation spot?
Ooh. So I don't know if this is the top of my list, but I got to say that my wife planned this trip pre-COVID where we were going to go to some place in Alaska. And I was like, man, Alaska, you know, that's cold. That's a lot of snow and ice. And but I love the mountains. And she didn't give me the full lowdown on how remote this place was.
Uh-oh.
So we finally...
Technology guy.
Yeah, we just made up this trip. This place was spectacular. Like, it was one of those things where I got to the airport, and I was like, okay, you know, what's the plan? So I was in Phoenix at the race, finished the broadcast, flew to Seattle, met up with the kids and my wife, Ingrid, and the next morning we're taking off to go to Anchorage, Alaska.
Hmm.
And so we get to Anchorage, Alaska. I'm like, well, what's the plan here? What's going on? I like to be surprised sometimes on the vacation. My wife's pretty good at it. I never lose faith in her abilities to come up with some pretty spectacular things. Anyway, so all of a sudden it's like a blizzard outside, and I'm like, how are we going to get there? Well, The only way you can get to this place is either by a plane that can land on ice, like on the snow, or a helicopter. Mm. And I was like, there's no way we can helicopter in this weather. So they get us out of the plane, and they take us over this hangar with a helicopter pilot. He's like, hey, you know, I flew in the military. You don't have anything to worry about. I wouldn't fly if it was dangerous. We're all good. He's like, it's clear 5 minutes from here. We just got to get through this first 5 minutes of snow. I'm like, snow and a helicopter, like, that doesn't ring a bell
of success.
But I got to say, this guy was one of the most spectacular pilots I've ever flown with. Wow. And he was super confident. And we got out there, and he was right. It was blue skies 5 minutes away.
Wow.
And we flew into the Denali National Park. And I didn't, you know, I know about Denali, heard of it and all that stuff, but I never really knew a lot about it. And I got to say, it was just one of the most spectacular places I've ever been. Just the beauty, I learned so much about the glaciers, how they melt and how the snow builds up on them over the winter, how tall Denali is, you know, one of the tallest mountains in the world, and certainly tallest peak in North America. So I got to say, that one's fresh on my mind right now. Yeah. Prior to that, we did a trip a few summers ago. We went to Indonesia. My son loved Komodo dragon, still does. Mm. And so every time, you know, we go to a zoo or something, or he's watching a show on TV, he's like, Komodo dragons, Komodo dragons. So my wife, she's like, well, we're going to take him to see Komodo dragons on Komodo Island. So wow. We went to Indonesia.
not just Ashburn Zoo. Indonesia.
Like,
I've seen them. They were just about,
the
they
were Jeffrey Muscles.
Ooh. Man, I feel terrible. I'm like, I'm not trying to flex. I'm just
we're just joking. Yeah, it's
our inside joke.
They get on me all
right.
the time. So
Steve is a habitual flexer. Like, he'll flex effortlessly. Like, oh. Yeah.
Well, if you ask me,
he's a habitual flexer.
Well, I'm just living my life.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just answering the question.
Yeah, right? I said favorites. Vacation. I didn't say my favorite vacation. I just asked the man about his. Yeah.
Those are probably the
yeah. So tell us about
spectacular vacations I've been on.
So you went on the glaciers, and then you saw how they make and invent dragons. What else?
How they invent dragons.
What else? Huh?
Both the magic dragons, right?
The real dragon.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Oh, we're going to see. You know, next week we're going to see. You know. Where the
Game
actual
of
rock
dragon.
They pulled the sword out of the stone.
Right. Well, my wife says I've got this. I got this idea of going somewhere on a vacation. I get worried. I'm like, oh boy, I got to work.
Okay,
harder.
So
work harder.
I think I know by your face. What do you get worried about? The location or how much it's going to cost?
Oh, the bill.
There's only one thing. I'm an adventurer. I'll go anywhere. Yeah. It takes a lot to make me nervous, but paying for
it's the price tag.
That price tag makes
that's my first question. How much it costs? Hey, we could go. How much it costs?
I've actually had to tell myself the last two or three times, like, okay, don't let that be the first thing that comes out of your mouth. I know you're thinking it.
So you have to have the prep talk with yourself.
Yeah, I'm talking to myself. I'm like, don't do it, don't do it.
Don't do it, don't do it.
So I didn't realize how hard it is. Yeah. It is so hard for me not to immediately just go, well, that sounds expensive.
Same thing. We just booked our summer trip, and I was thinking that the whole time.
Now, you staying domestic with all the COVID stuff, I know it's hard to
so
travel.
We actually, my wife has been trying to get me so long, and so we finally committed. At first, she was trying to get me to buy a Sprinter van and an RV. And I said, let's rent first. Let's rent this first to see. So we're taking I think it's like 12, 13 days. Flying to LA, driving to Orange County, staying there for a couple of days, then driving to Lake Powell.
Sweet.
Then from Lake Powell going to Moab or Zion, glamping.
Love it.
Oh, glamping, man, under the lights, under the stars. So emphasis on glamping. Because this brother right here, I don't camp.
Oh, you going to glamp.
I'm going to glamp.
Okay, I love to camp, right. But it's got a little.
You're like the Griswolds.
No, it's called glamping. So it's an open tent with a shower, no technology.
Oh, okay.
And but Chico. We can have lunch and breakfast in a little. So everything's under a tent, no open door. Love so it. I'm a little worried about that though. Right. I'm a little bit nervous about something walking up on me. Right? Hey, nothing is worse than having to go pee and something sneak up on you.
That's the whole point of camping. You're supposed to test your survivalist.
Does this ninja look like he want to camp?
See, I don't worry about...
I can't camp in Jordans.
I worry about bugs. Yeah. I don't like mosquito bites and stuff like that. Like snakes and bears, that don't bother me.
So safe to say, y'all won't be on Naked and Afraid.
I just saw on Naked and Afraid, a guy said a grizzly bear could get up to 30 miles per hour. My peak was 22, 25 if I'm good.
The math don't add up.
The math, get some spark in me, 25.7. Yeah. Well, I'm still short.
Yeah, well, the first thing is don't try to outrun the bear.
I'm a brother. That's the first instinct.
Yeah.
I ain't got to outrun the bear.
He got to catch me.
I just got to outrun right. the last guy. But the last guy can't be one of your kids.
Yeah.
So,
tough decisions.
Hey, damn shame what Steve did to one of his kids and left them, huh? And then there, we're driving to Utah.
So I love that. I love hearing this because to me, that's my kind of vacation. That's not my wife's kind of vacation. Yeah. That's my kind of vacation because every year I rent an Airstream and I go somewhere. And I just, but it's just me. Like, I just kind of do my Zen solo trip once a year.
Oh, wow.
Where I just rent this.
You get a pass for that?
I do.
Whoa.
I do. And every year my wife said, you're going to go you can get an Airstream to a campground by yourself. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, She's like, gives me that look.
You're giving me inspiration, Jeff. I'm going to try this.
But I just did that trip a few weeks ago, and I went to Santa Barbara. So I highly recommend, go to some places like that with that Sprinter.
Well, we're going to drive up and down the coast. Cool. So we're going L.A. and finish in Utah.
Love it. So. Now, hey, man, we got some of the most beautiful landscape, national parks in the world. So it sounds like you're going to hit a couple.
Yeah, we're going to see them. That's the whole point of seeing some stuff. We like to travel around. Before the pandemic, we had a 2-week vacation for Israel, but that got canceled. Mm. And it took me.
Just imagine what's going to happen when things finally get back to real normal, right? I think there's going to be a real normal. I don't know. Maybe it's a new normal.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at CutToItPodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
I always like to grill, like at the racetrack.
Grill.
Like grill out. Yeah. Steaks, chicken, just basic stuff.
You put fish on the grill?
I'll put like salmon on a plank.
Okay, there you go. That's the right way to do it if you're gonna do it. I know where Steve's gonna go. Don't let him go. Don't let him take you down his path. He doesn't believe that fish should go on a grill.
Well,
I agree.
I do a lot of pan searing stuff. I like that, a little
on
olive
the grill?
Oil. No, pan seared on the.
I'm just testing your cooking skills, player.
But that's what I was gonna say is that the cooking through COVID has been whole next level because
Go ahead and
it's
flex.
Like get on Instagram and you find these chefs that were doing stuff like doing cooking lessons on Instagram. You're doing all kinds of
and you
crazy
recreate
dishes
it?
And you just follow.
That's cool.
I mean, I'm good at following directions. So cooking
good.
Works for
hit the
me.
Gas
yeah, exactly. So like my wife loves steak au poivre, so we did that one night. But the other thing
is that like a ribeye or no?
Yeah, what that be?
The other one you're gonna laugh at is DJing.
Wait, don't just kind of
hold up, wait a minute
over that.
Yeah,
now I know that Nelly rapped about you in E.I.
Yeah.
I know Jay-Z rapped about you. So now we got
DJ Jazzy Jeff? I thought that name was already taken.
It's already taken, unfortunately.
Yeah. You DJ?
I'm not qualified to have a DJ name.
Yeah.
You DJ.
Yeah.
But so I went to Ibiza a few years ago, several years ago, and had a good vacation there. Went to Burning Man, which is just mind-blowing experience. Uh-huh. And ever since those two experiences, I've just, you know, like I always like partying and having fun, you know, with my wife, with friends. But all the club music that don't was never my thing until I went to these two places. And now I'm like, okay, it's funny. Even people that know me for years, like, they're like, damn, Jeff, I've known you for a long time. You surprise the hell out of me sometimes. And I've always loved music. Mm-hmm. You know, all kinds of music, from growing up as a kid in California. My sister had an influence on me. She's 4 years older than me. And so it was like, you know, Tom Jones and the Beatles and stuff like that. And so I was like, okay, that's not necessarily me. And then...
Okay, thank you. When you said Tom Jones, I was like...
It's not unusual.
No. I was like...
Right? And so I'm like, okay. So then I got into more like... you know, pop and some rock and roll and you know, AC/DC all that stuff. And then I started break dancing and getting into
you were break dancing?
Yes, dude. Yes.
No.
Did you have a jacket?
Oh yeah. Dude, I was Baby Smurf. I had no
on the jacket.
Joke.
It said Baby Smurf.
Baby Smurf. I was in a group, dude.
So he was in a crew.
So you was like doing. You was on the ground, like doing all that.
I just did stuff on the ground.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. You weren't like Electric Boogaloo.
No. I didn't do any popping. Okay. Like that. It was just.
He stayed within his genetic gene pool.
So,
right.
So Jeff Gordon, break dancing, and now you're
little Smurf.
I'm pretty good at knowing.
So are you DJ Smurf now?
No.
Okay. I tried. That was one.
It's
taken.
Yeah. But
that's what backstage does. Thanks.
So my music like has gone all over the place.
Wow.
And so right now what I'm and what's been fascinating about this whole
conversation.
Yeah. But this whole journey is, I didn't know. I always was fascinated in the club watching the DJ. I'm like, that's cool. Yeah. I wish I could do that. Control.
Same here.
Control the game.
You know, I don't know about you, Steve.
No, I'm right there
I'm
with you.
I'm a race car driver with a helmet on inside a race car that's loud, but I still wanted to be on the stage. You know, I like to entertain.
Yeah,
but
sometimes.
I couldn't play an instrument. I couldn't sing.
You want to rock the party.
Yeah, I like that. I like entertaining people.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And so... what's been fascinating through this is learning how all this DJ equipment and the software and the computer and all that stuff plays a role in it, you know, and how it syncs the music and you know, then you've got all these different platforms, SoundCloud, Tidal, of where you're getting all your music from.
Wow.
And so yeah, it's I mean to build your library up, God, it takes so much of your effort and time. So I have a whole new appreciation. And I've got a few friends there, DJs. I know Diplo and Chainsmokers and some of these guys. I just met them over the years.
I expect to see Jeff Gordon now, like, DJing at Coachella.
Oh,
is that next?
Not if you want me entertained. You know? I got good music, but I'm not gonna.
It sounds like
I'm
you're
not
eclectic.
Gonna be fancy.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be fancy. Yeah. Like you're.
The versatile DJs are always the best ones, where you can take me from genre to genre. Those
I can
are the
definitely
best
do
ones.
That. I got a lot of different music.
See,
sure.
All right.
So, but anyway, so it's
that's
been
super
fun.
Cool.
My brother-in-law's getting married. I'm gonna reach out to you.
If my wife was here, she'd say, "Yeah, he's gone a little crazy with this DJing stuff." Like I have in my garage. I was actually moved before I came over here. I've got 218s and 215-inch subwoofers.
What kind of amp you running with it?
So these are all powered subs.
Oh, okay,
so you don't need the amp, because I'm like, I'm not all into that. I just want plug and play. But I've got this Denon DJ controller that it's like, what the hell am I doing with this thing? I mean, I can play four different things at one time, and it's lit up. So I'm like that guy that shows up at the golf course with a set of brand new pings. Like, he looks like he knows what he's doing, but Yeah, and then wait till I hit the ball. Like, it's like, I have no idea where it's going to go. Right. That's kind of how I am.
Or we're going to have a DJ battle with you and Shaq, because Shaq DJs now, too. So yeah. We got this crossover.
Well, yeah. And then what I've learned about all that, right, is you know, you go hire somebody to help you kind of produce your show.
Oh.
So I'm not it's there yet. Shaq's right. on another level.
All right. Wow. Well, we're going to get Jeff Gordon there. DJ Jeff.
All right, last one. I just got schooled. Man, this is...
We weren't prepared for this. Jeff.
My mind is blown. It's like, yeah, you know, Jeff.
This wasn't in the research.
DJing? Yeah. Stop it. You ain't heard Lil Smurf?
Right. You ain't heard DJ Smurf?
What?
DJ Smurf?
DJ Smurf?
Oh, man.
When he on the ones and twos, hey, it's rocking.
Don't get it twisted. Right.
No cap.
Yeah. Hey, he'll head out in his Airstream. But we go. You see Santa Barbara? Fishing? Playing DJ? DJ Smurf.
I'm so screwed.
No, I like it though. I like it. Yeah. All right. So last one. You know, being from California, which I knew, and we do it as well. A fellow Californian. California rolling stop or a full complete stop?
Does anybody come to a complete stop these days? I'm probably I like to follow the rules. So yeah. I must say I do like to follow the rules, I don't think my tires have ever just come to a full stop.
Okay. The rule we say in our family, in the neighborhoods, no cop, no stop.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say is if I see something out of the corner of my eye that I need to stop for.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go. Listen. That was the best ice. Yeah, that was, we had.
We always get something interesting out of guests, but that's by far the most awesome. Interesting tidbit.
This is what I learned in TV is you don't want to empty the bucket too early. I think I just emptied the bucket.
No, you did. But we appreciate you did it on our platform.
No, you did. All right. So, where are you from in a place you call your hometown?
So, man, I'm like. Somebody that's all from all over the place, right? Because my birthplace, Vallejo, California, mm-hmm. that I lived until I was about 14, took me then racing to Indiana, to a place called Pittsboro, Indiana. So for the longest time, I always called Pittsboro my hometown. Mm. But then moved to North Carolina. So I'm in Charlotte, you know, now. That's where I spend most of my time. My business is obviously racing and NASCAR and whether it be working for Fox Sports or Hendrick Motorsports. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple dealerships in North Carolina. So this is really, my kids are in school here. So this, Charlotte is my home, but we love to travel as I mentioned earlier. So I don't know if we can be locked down in any one place for too long. I challenge people all the time. You know, even my wife, you know, my wife's from Belgium and we met in New York. I brought her to Charlotte and she's like, you know, I'm used to New York.
So she's a little skeptical. She's a little skeptic at first.
So, but you know, I challenge anybody of find a better place to bring up your kids.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, better place to live. There's lots of opportunities here. Mm-hmm. Weather, you know, if you look at it, mm-hmm. you got the seasons, but nice weather. My family all followed me here. My mom, my stepdad, my sister, my stepbrother all came here because they loved. None of them wanted to go to Indiana, but they all came here.
Yeah. That's cool.
So it's a great place.
Not to age you, but growing up in Vallejo, growing up in Indiana, you know, growing up in those places, how did it shape your view on the world as you see it today?
Yeah, probably growing up in Vallejo more than anything else, right? I mean, very diverse school, public school. I didn't go to private school. You know, from getting in fights at school to the type of education, you know, that I got, probably more life lesson education than anything else. Mm. I didn't think my education I got at school was very good. Like, I wasn't that interested. I was more of an average student anyway because I wanted to race. My parents introduced me to racing very young at 5. So school was like just something I felt like I needed to do. But, you know, the kids that I interacted with taught me a lot, you know, about life. Just things happen fast, man. Just being introduced and seeing things that I didn't see anywhere else. kids bring in guns and knives to school in, yeah. In you know, 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah.
You know, just clothing, music, mm-hmm. you know, just different cultures, different, you know, lifestyles, just a little bit of everything. I mean, mm-hmm. it's very, you know, in Vallejo, it's a big Filipino population, mm-hmm. Mexican population, African-American population, white population. It just kind of all congregating
yeah.
in one place. And I went from that to going Indiana. To Indiana,
yeah.
and it was people with tractors and out on farms and yeah. you know milking cows and things like yeah. that. And I just wanted to race. So, but I always fell back to, when I came to Indiana, and I'm talking to the kids. They're like, "Man, you're from Mars. Where are you from? Like, where'd you learn all these things?" And man, you grow up fast, you know, yeah. in a place in California. I didn't grow up in a fluent, you know, wealthy family. My parents worked hard, but they you know, they got me into racing too. So it wasn't like we were poor or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I got to see them have to work, you know, as hard as they did to have the things that we had and what that created also in racing for me.
Now, that's interesting now that you say that. How does that, with everything you experience at such a young age growing up, how does that play into your parenting here in Charlotte? Because Charlotte has its places, but it's not the way you're talking about in the 80s and 90s. California was just a different place.
Yeah.
Right? You have Reginald Denning, Rodney King. You up in Northern California a little bit, where you have the Black Panther movement as well, the influence of that, Oakland, California,
mm-hmm.
San Francisco. All of that in the 80s and 90s was a hotbed for whether it was racial injustice, equality of justice. You have gay rights, AIDS epidemic, poor folks, people getting beat by the police.
It's just a myriad of issues,
right?
for decades.
You got the LA riots, right. Down, you know, 5 hours down the street, which I experienced. And going through all of that and seeing that and witnessing that, and now you're a dad, and you know what you were taught and learned in the 7th grade, what you experienced, it has to at least play. I'll just say it the way I want to say it is, I find myself at times parenting out of fear because I know what I experienced.
Yeah.
And how does that, do you ever think about that, or do you look at yourself and say, man, am I parenting for the best way, or am I parenting out of fear? Because I know what I experienced and what I didn't need to know at 12 years old, that I know my kids just can't handle it, or I just desire for them not to be exposed to it at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, this is we could do a podcast on just this subject alone, right? Because you know, parenting, I think is the toughest job there is on the planet.
Yes.
And I thought my parents did of course, it's like I told you, my mom, my stepdad, I thought they did an amazing job. But I think most of what they did was kind of out of necessity of that's how our lives just worked.
Yep.
And you know, I think now I won't let my kids leave my driveway.
Mm.
When I was living in Vallejo, I'd get on my bike and I'd go 10 miles,
you were just going for the afternoon.
Bro,
just be home
before the streetlights come on.
Exactly.
That was it. Mm-hmm.
And it was seldom when I got home before the streetlight.
Yeah. Maybe that was just our rule, but you had to be back home before that streetlight came on.
Oh, yeah.
If
I yell Steve-on one more damn time.
Right.
That just made me think of one story.
Do tell.
I was probably, I think I was sixth or seventh grade.
Still remember? He got a whooping.
No,
somebody else got a whooping.
I should have got whooped. But I was always pushing the limits, right, of being home by dinner time or light, you know, when it got dark, lights come on. and so I was across the neighborhood like a mile or two, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go to my other buddy's house that's just around the corner. Mm-hmm. And then that way I'm close to home, so I only have a five-minute, you know,
sprint.
Skateboard. I was either riding a bike or skateboarding. Yeah. That's how I got around. And always on wheels, man. These wheels, unlike those wheels you got underneath me, my wheels didn't take me far. So this guy, they had a pool in the back of their house. That was a big deal, right?
Absolutely.
They got a pool. And so I'm at his house, and I'm watching the clock, and right as I was getting ready to leave, I stepped off into the pool. Like, we were messing around in the backyard, and I run around the corner, whoom. I wasn't even supposed to be at his house.
Okay? How are you going to explain this?
Right. And then now I'm soaking wet from the waist down. So I did one of those walk in the front door. Hey! And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, come in here. And it was literally like, they're like, what happened? I'm like, I don't remember what I'm like, stepped in a puddle or something. You know, it hadn't rained in damn a month.
You would have came out better just saying I urinated on myself.
I don't mean this to make this a bad joke, but what kind of puddle? I know you're not tall, but you ain't.
No, they
ain't a centimeter tall.
I don't think they knew that.
Like, who steps in a puddle? He's wet from the waist down, and I stepped in a puddle.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't say I was the sharpest knife in the drawer, but anyway, I don't know what made me think about that.
So that's your conscience.
But going back to the parenting, you know, my parents, I don't, and I ask them this every once in a while, and I don't know if I've gotten a straight answer, but I worry so much about my kids now, right, of thinking all the things that I did. Thinking about the things that are happening in the world, and I want them to experience all these things, but I just have such a hard time letting go.
Yeah,
and I don't, you know, I don't know if it's who I've become through racing, but I definitely want to control them more than I should, and that's when I'm you know, battling with my own demons, and you know, me and my wife are trying to talk about parenting. It's how, you know, how you let go. My daughter's 13 now, so I have no choice but to let go. She's like on her own path, doesn't care about what I did, who I am. She barely cares that I'm her dad right now some days. But we got a cool relationship too, so I want to keep and maintain that. So it's tough. But I do want to, you know, bring up one thing. You know, when I lived in Vallejo, and I left Vallejo and I moved to Indiana, and then, you know, you if racism or something would get brought up, I was like, you know what? I don't see people for the color of their skin. I judge each person individually, and I, you know, I want to know who they are. I don't care about anything else that's influencing that. But as I've gotten older, I realize that I actually want to see every person for, you know, who
that's
they
cool.
are. The color of their skin has a story about who they are, and you know, that's been I think more of a change of since I become a parent, and how I want to teach, you know, those things to my kids about that, you know, it's not just, you know, the way a person looks. It's you got to go deeper and find out, you know, really why they are who they are, good or bad. Because you know, we've all had some major influence, whether it be our parents, life's experiences. Like you were mentioning to me, you know, what did Vallejo, I mean, I got in a fight in school one day, and I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that moment. I'll tell you a quick story on this. So me and this kid, we didn't get along, and I can't remember, he was calling me out on something in one of our classes, and I was like, man, I'll meet you after school. And he's like, all right.
That's what I'm talking about.
So now I usually wouldn't mess with somebody that I didn't think that I had a shot at, right? So he was a little taller than me, but I was like, and I wasn't a big kid, so it wasn't really like I was messing with him. I know, shocking. But I was like, I'm like, all right, I think I got it. And I was a pretty good, like, grappler wrestler type. Like,
oh,
I could
you
get
was one of those, huh?
Okay. I just boom, get them on the ground.
Oh, okay.
But
takedown.
But I never punched anybody.
Oh.
So
that's kind of needed.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe
in the chest or something that, but never like wham.
Yeah.
And so, so I get after school, he meets up with me, and man, I take him down and I'm on top of him. I'm like, yeah, what am I going to do? And all of a sudden, whoop, whoop, like lights, you know, and cops come by and I'm like, boom, we all scatter. And so the next day show up at school and he walks up to me and he's like, hey man, where'd you run off to?
Bow.
Oh no, he sucker punched you?
No, that ain't a sucker punch.
Dude.
That's a continuation.
That's the lesson I should have known that was coming.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The police stopped it. You said a fight, not a wrestling match.
That's right. No, you're right.
You don't 1, 2, 3, game over.
Right. I learned two lessons.
Where he hit you in the face?
Oh yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
Okay. Clear. I didn't have a black eye, but I definitely was like, whoa. Oh. And he knocked me back. And as I came for him, then everybody pulled us apart. And we both got suspended.
He saved you from an ass whooping.
No. Oh, I had this guy.
How many times are you gonna take him down?
But he was smart. He was smarter than me though.
Jeff, hold on. You can't get hit in the face.
You can't win a smart fight.
Hold on. You can't hit him in the face and then take him down and put him in a pinky grappler.
Right.
Say uncle. Right. Say uncle. Right. Uncle Jeff. All right. Fight's over.
Yeah, you can't just put someone in the Kurt Angle ankle lock and think it's going to be right.
At that point, I was ready to hit him.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't mind. I wasn't afraid
DJ
to hit
Smurf.
Him.
Right.
I love
and
that.
And he ran from the police.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff got street cred, man.
So my point is that, you know, I learned that day, man. Never let your guard down. Never think you're in a safe place, environment, unless you know what the other person's thinking. And you never can know what they're thinking.
Here's what I love what you said, that I think sometimes a lot of us right now in this time, we try to skirt over and try to avoid the word you use with a J, judge.
Yeah.
You know, you say you judge people for who they are.
Yeah.
A lot of times we don't want to say, well, we're judging people. We judge everything. We judge, is that flavor good or not? I love what you said because I think that is important. It's nothing wrong with judging someone. It's when you start to judge them and put them down.
Or on a preconceived notion.
Yes.
What I love that Jeff said is that I went from saying, I don't see color to saying I see color, because that's who God made you, right?
Yeah.
God made you with your color. So being able to see race says I see that person for who they are, completely who they are. And that, one, is a testament to growth.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it is a testament to everything that Steve's saying, is that, yeah, you build an opinion off someone, but based off of their whole self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you allow that individual to represent themselves, whether it's good or bad, because there are times we represent ourselves very poor, depending on the day.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's some days you get up on the wrong side of bed and you just are not as outgoing. You're not
100%.
As nice. You feel groggy today, or you just feel like, look, I'm being sweatpants, T-shirt, shoes, no socks. And that day you woke up saying, hey, this is who I am. And there are some people who will see that and go, I don't want to be next to that person, or that person seems like you're feeling.
Yeah, some days I don't want to be next to myself.
Yes. And that's great. I just thought that I wanted to point that out, because there are times people just try so hard.
Yeah.
I don't judge. We all do.
Yeah.
We all do. Whether we want to or not, want to admit it, we do. And I think in the right context, judging is okay.
Whether it's okay or not, it's happening.
Yeah.
And so you've got to get thick skin yourself.
Absolutely.
And then you've got to I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt, you know, and I like second chances, and I like, you know, to try to be more thorough in my judging. Like if I only had a quick interaction with somebody, you know, and I didn't like the interaction, I'll go, well, I wonder what it was, to your point, like, was it something that happened to them in their life that day, whatever. You say, okay, I'm not going to let that, you know, get to me. Now, if I get to know that person And I realize that person is a real jackass in every interaction I've had with him. I'm going to judge him as a jackass.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
You talked about you getting into racing at such a young age. At 6 years old, I don't even remember what I was doing at 6 years old. But, you know, the closest thing I had to any vehicle was I had a Dukes of Hazzard set, which was the big wheel, and then a car that was a pedal. I was not thinking about racing at 6 years old. Clutch, park, clutch, reverse, neutral.
There was no clutch on the big wheel.
I know it wasn't.
I'll be honest, I think my dad brought home a race car before he ever brought home a big wheel. I mean,
really?
It's just I did race bicycles. We had a BMX bicycle track up the street.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all
was in a
miles.
Good neighborhood then.
Yeah. It was a cool track. No, sure. It was like you had the baseball little league fields, and then not too far away from that you had a drive-in movie theater, and then on the corner was this BMX bicycle track, and that's just the kids in my neighborhood.
That's what y'all did.
That's what they did. Yeah. And so I was, again, little kid. I was the youngest kid. I was always hanging out with older kids, and my sister was older, so I'd hang out with her friends too. And so I learned to ride a bike real young.
Me too.
And
racing
is a whole different thing.
In kindergarten, I learned how to ride a bike in kindergarten on the beach cruiser.
Yeah. See that's LA right there. Yeah. That's Southern California.
Never went no beach cruisers in North Carolina. I can tell you that.
Definitely weren't any beach cruisers in Vallejo either. But there were some lowrider bikes, though. There were some of those cool bikes. But my stepdad. You have to understand him to understand my whole story, because one, he met my mom very young. My mom and my dad split up when I was just a baby, and then she met through work, you know, my stepdad, and then they got married. So I was, I don't know, maybe one or something like that at the time they got married, and he just took to his stepkids. Of man, I wanna give them, you know, opportunities and present some things to them. And so I don't know, somehow he saw right away I had good hand eye coordination, and boom, by the time I'm three, I'm riding a bicycle. And by the time I'm four, wow, I was racing bicycles at, you know, at this track. And I mean, I was okay. You know, because you were four, right?
How does a 4-year-old have enough focus to race anything?
Yeah, but there weren't a whole lot of 4-year-olds.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So for us, you were pretty good without even being there.
I mean, I'm not trying to knock you, but there's a high probability you still had at least a pull up on at night, and you're riding bikes in the day.
Right.
Like, I was okay.
Yeah. Just the fact that you were riding a bike
at 4 years old,
you were
probably okay going against 6-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how old the other kids were, but I mean, I was holding my own. And then there was one kid, I remember, anytime he showed up, it was like, oh, man. And so you'd hope he'd go down or something the first turn. But there was a couple wrecks of some other kids, and I got into a small one. And my mom was telling my dad, he's like, she's like, I don't know about this. You know, I see him getting hurt. And so he had some friends that race cars. So, you know, 6 months later,
hold on, the next thing I know,
he's bringing home this little car.
So, hold on. My little Jeffy is going to get hurt riding bikes.
So let's go get this miniature car.
Let's go get this miniature car, because he ain't going to get hurt going faster in this car.
This is how good of a salesman my stepdad is, because he convinced my mom. He's like, no, he's got a helmet, seatbelt.
I would say it does kind of sound like an upgrade when you think about it.
He made her believe
You sell it up to the mom. It does kind of sound, he's going to have a helmet.
This
on.
Is a non-African American conversation. Because ain't no ninjas I know. You cannot stop from BMX to car.
There was still some. There's still some people in neighborhoods who couldn't drive. Yes. Much less you're going to get a four-year-old
driving a car and
without a license.
Without a license, and grandma who's 60 still ain't got her license. Right. My grandmother, her first car she got when she was, I would say, 57, 58 years old.
My grandmother never drove.
She got it because, unfortunately, my aunt got inherited some money, and so she bought my grandmother. It was a Dodge Colt. It was a 1984. I remember 1984 Dodge Colt. Now, we was in the, we were still driving that Colt when I was in high school, but that's another story. So the fact that you go from more safety to a bike to a car, bro, again, you still probably in pull-ups at night.
and now he's behind the wheel. He's behind the wheel. As long as it's got four wheels, it's a car. I don't care what
it is. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it was crazy, man.
Dodge,
it was crazy.
Colt, Ford, like, Pinto, it's still a car.
I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest, I know people, but I don't know back then what Gerard doing.
He took the car for a spin.
Yeah, for the weekend, he up in Huntersville driving.
Right.
Driving what? A car.
Right.
Hey, there's a track out in Kannapolis. You would not believe the number of kids out there racing.
So that does lead to
it opened up my eyes to this. Like, you think of you know, Pop Warner or Little League, whatever you were exposed to.
I mean, yeah, I got it. Yeah, but six.
Maybe it was young. I was probably a little bit on the young side for most kids. Yeah. But I'm going to tell you what, right now, you go out there, there are 6 and 7 year old kids. Wow. And there's some 4 year olds out there that can't race, but they'll let them drive. I'm telling you, it's crazy.
Hold on. What are they doing?
They'll let them practice. They'll let them practice until they get to 5. You got to be 5.
So, I mean, you kind of walked into the question.
I drove right into it.
I know the pathway. If I wanted to play football, I know I can play Little League or Pop Warner football. If I want to play basketball, I can go to a YMCA or a rec center.
Or AAU team.
What is the pathway of entry into NASCAR? Because it seems like we've had young drivers on. We've mentioned Chase Elliott or William Byron, and they've had very different entry points into NASCAR. But from your standpoint, what is that pathway to take in order to become a NASCAR driver or a race car driver overall?
Yeah, I mean, somebody is going to have to introduce you to it. Somebody is going to have to have the initial cost of it, because it's not cheap, right? There are less expensive ways to just get introduced to it. Mm. And then there's, you know...
Like? Hold on. The less expensive ways, like?
Well, I mean, you know, you could have somebody that says, hey, I got a car here. You want to drive it? I mean, it could be no cost, right? Somebody else has to give you that opportunity. If you wanted to just go out and buy your own stuff, you're talking about, you know, top-notch quarter midget engine, chassis, trailer, and all. I mean, you're probably $8,000-$10,000 just to get that car, you know, on the track. So it's not cheap.
Hmm. Don't have that at the sporting goods store.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, this is something.
Bass Pro Shop ain't got that out.
I would love to see more of an initiative to introduce kids to it, you know, that can't afford it, that maybe are interested in racing, maybe they watch racing or whatever, like cars. If they like a little slot car video game, and say, okay, how do I go racing, and have whether it be a scholarship, whatever it may be. And I think there's some opportunities out there for that, but they're very, very few. Mm. So it is, you know, a sport that I would say, compared to other sports, is expensive to get into, even at the very beginning.
I definitely see from the expense standpoint, but even are there initiatives that potentially happen, even to just create just that, like I said, that barrier of entry? To be able to create a pipeline for people to know, or if I go in through particularly this program or this initiative, that it puts me on the pathway to becoming a driver.
Yeah.
Because I think that's great, because you look at all the other sports. They have
some sort of developmental.
They have or some of them are using ethnicity as an opportunity, like first tee for golf.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And, Arthur Ashe program for tennis. That's how I was introduced to tennis when I was a young boy, right? It was all about Arthur Ashe. And then, you know, Venus and Serena you know, those young women seeing people that look like them be able to, even though it wasn't as many, being able to see that. You have basketball. Obviously, basketball is what it is. You have football, what it is. You know, soccer and I believe
racing,
are the last two sports where the developmentally or easy accessibility doesn't really exist, like you said. And I don't think people really know how, like.
I have no idea how to get involved. Yeah. If I had an interest in that.
You're telling me, like, Chase was different because he's third generation of racing, right? He has his whole little world out there in Georgia, right? William Byron with the technology, right? Yeah. And what he, the technology aspect, but then also he had been racing. Mm-hmm. But you are so unique because it has been ingrained from you since such a young age, racing and speed, and then a success. We haven't had, and then, you know, I know Dale and what he's experienced with second and third generation.
Yeah.
But no one ever.
It's getting more and more rare. And by the way, in Vallejo, California, there was nobody racing. I was the only kid in Vallejo that was racing.
Well, yeah. NASCAR really hadn't made it out that way.
But you have to understand, this goes way beyond. I didn't even know what NASCAR was back then. Like, really? I didn't know what NASCAR was until I was in my teens. But there's dirt track racing, sprint cars. There's IndyCar. I knew what the Indy 500 was.
Yeah, me too.
Right, but I did not know what NASCAR was until I was older. So, you know, when you grow up in the open wheel, because of quarter midgets I'm talking about, that's what they're called, and go-karts, that really leads you more to the path of open wheel racing and not necessarily stock cars. Stock cars didn't really become big out in California until much later. They are now. I mean, we've had, if you think about Jimmy Johnson, myself, and Kevin Harvick, all champions of NASCAR from California. That's very, very rare. So now it's opened up more opportunities and doors. You know, to try to answer your question, right now, for a 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, somebody's going to have to take them to the racetrack and show them these types of race cars and then figure out, okay, how could we do this? Is there a way? But once you get older, there are some paths. NASCAR has some different initiatives. Whether you want to be a pit crew member, a NASCAR official, an engineer, I think also though, I think of somebody like maybe Danica Patrick or a Haley Deegan right now is a female racer who's young and up and coming. Bubba Wallace. I think this is some of their long term opportunities. Like they're changing how people view the sport, and they have a long-term impact.
They're
on
causing an interest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Totally. Yep. And so I think that I could see them playing a bigger role in this, but we all got to play a role in it.
Absolutely.
And because to me, I want to see a NASCAR that everybody goes, man, this is for everybody. This is for anybody. If you have talent and you have interest, you can excel at this, and it doesn't matter where you came from.
Well, we got to stop right there. Mm-hmm. You thought that was it?
But there's more.
There is so much more. Come back in the next episode when you hear DJ Jeff Gordon hits us on the 1s and 2s.
Come back for part 2.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent, and most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith, Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It. Cut to It with Steve Smith, Sr. That is me, is a production of Cut to It, LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter,
with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton. If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. 'Cause you know it's on. It's on.